Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome, everybody.
Yes.
I want to end the secular year, right? That's right. Start the new year off. The chapter 16 of Yeshayahu. So, this chapter, we mentioned last week two interesting things about Yeshayahu, that he said prophecy to the Gentiles as well.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know whether he gave the lectures to them, whether he sent a letter, whether they just followed, you know, the sages would say something and they would listen. But the prophets did sometimes speak to the neighboring countries, and they were respected as wise men, and they were given a message. Sometimes the purpose of the message was for us. In other words, even though what was happening would affect them, but we needed to know that those that were mean to us, those who were nasty neighbors, would not go unpunished. We're talking about this, that in the Middle East, we've never had good neighbors. Like, it's one thing to have one bad neighbor, but to be surrounded by bad neighbors, like, there are so many countries that live in the middle of nowhere and nobody bothers each other, and not Eretz Yisrael. Like, it has very interesting tribal neighbors, and each one is a little different. And each one has a different fate, and each one is given a different chance. This one, we started it really in the chapter 15, we're continuing in 16, is about Moab. What do we know about Moab? Moab was a relative of ours. They say there's no feud like a family feud. But Moab was from Abraham's nephew, Lot. And Abraham extended himself for his nephew. His nephew, like, always got into trouble, and then Abraham had to come bail him out, so to speak. When he got captured by, caught up in a war, Abraham came to rescue him. He got caught up in Sodom, and it wasn't Abraham's merit that he was saved. So we had a reasonable expectation that the Moabites would appreciate that. And there's almost a lesson here that the Jewish people is called Yehuda, to give thanks. And we don't see anything wrong in giving thanks. In fact, the essence of being a Jew is to give thanks, is to appreciate things. A person can only see his service of Hashem if he appreciates being alive and appreciates all the gifts that God has given us. Whereas there are other people that they don't appreciate things. In fact, you do them a favor, and it sometimes turns to resentment, because people don't like owing things to people. They don't like the idea that they owe, that you did them a favor or they owe you one. And so instead of them looking at it that you did them a favor, they'll come up with some idea. Well, you're after something, you have an agenda. I think it was Chaim Sofer, that he had somebody in his congregation. He was a famous rabbi in Czechoslovakia, and he had someone in his congregation was giving him a really hard time. And he said, "I don't understand. I didn't do him a favor that he should hate me so much." It's just a very strange thing that sometimes the people that you've done the most for will be the ones that give you trouble. And part of it is because deep down, a person doesn't want to owe someone something. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be beholden to somebody. They don't want to appreciate it. And you think the opposite. They should love you. You're so kind to them. But there's something in the person that makes it hard to appreciate things. There just is. It's part of what we call the Yetzirah. Like, it's not a good... Our job is the exact opposite. We try to appreciate people, even if it says a good guest will say that everything... this statement of the Gemara, that everything my host did was for me. Now, you know he was going to make the food anyways. You know he probably just wanted good conversation. And you know that maybe he didn't treat you so right. But you're supposed to say the opposite. Everything, all this trouble he went to, all this nice food they cooked, everything is for me. Everything, I appreciate it so much. It's so nice of them. But that's an attitude. And that's something that we try to work on, is to appreciate things, is to see all the things that went into it and how much was done. But there's another attitude, which is to be upset about what wasn't done. And again, we always run into that attitude. I did X, Y, Z, but it was never enough because you didn't do whatever else it was. And we all know people that, you know, but it's a, Moav was the one that didn't appreciate everything that Avraham did for him. He turned into resentment. And that, for that reason, Moab became an enemy. They were jealous of the Jewish people. They were resentful. We have a few episodes in history with Moab. They waged war against us early on. There was certain territory. We actually weren't allowed to take away territory from Moab. Moab had gotten into a war and lost territory. And then when we defeated Sihon and Og, they went out to war against us in the Torah. So some of the land of Moab came to the Jewish people. And it had been their ancestral land. And later on in the book of Shoftim, they went to war against us to try to conquer that land back. And they knew that we didn't take it from them, that it wasn't war over territory. Sounds something. Why would anybody go to war over a piece of land, especially so long ago? You know, like the. But that's the Middle East. That's a common theme. That was one thing. David HaMelech had a personal gripe against Moab. He was from Moab. He was from Rus. And one of the lessons of Moab was that Avraham put a lot of effort into his nephew. And where did he get him? He had this resentful, arrogant nephew that... Moab also was embarrassing because the nation of Moab came through incest. Everybody knows Moab is from my father. That was the daughters of Lot. They were so arrogant, they thought they were the only people alive. They thought that they were the most righteous ones and that no one else survived Sodom. They couldn't imagine that anybody could be as righteous as them and would have survived the flood. And so they decided to build up the world through their father, who was older. But the reason that happened was because Lot... secretly was drawn towards immoral things. That's why he settled in Sodom. That's the that's what we're told. On the other hand, Avraham did put a lot of effort into Moab, and the assumption is that when you put effort into something, it doesn't go lost. And so our understanding is that effort came out in Rus. Rus was the grandmother of the Jewish kings, of David HaMelech. She came out from Moab. When David HaMelech was on the most wanted list, when Shaul thought that he was trying to steal the kingdom from him, David had to run away. And he was concerned about his family, because when you're on the most wanted list, not only in those days, not only were you on the most wanted list, but your direct family were also considered people that supported the one that rebelled against the king. So David's family, his father Yishai, was considered a very righteous person. His mother, his brothers and sisters, the whole clan was in danger. If you remember, when David was running away, he stopped at a city of Kohanim very briefly to get food. And Shaul, in his jealousy, he wiped out the city. So David realized that his family was in mortal danger because they also supported him. And so David thought he had a good idea. They were related to the Moabites. For safekeeping, his family would go to Moab until Shaul got over his demons. He got over his... So his family went to Moab. And what happened? Moab killed his family. Mm-hmm. And that Moab is just a nasty people. What can I tell you? So... I shouldn't say there was some good in them. There was good that Avraham Avinu put in them. Even Lot, the way he took care of the visitors when the angels came, there is a certain good to Moab. Even the daughters wanted. They thought, and they made a mistake. They thought they were the only ones alive. They wanted to keep the world going. But on the other hand, there's a lot of bad there, and so there's that combination of good and bad. So here's the message. On chapter 16, Shochu Kar Moshel Eretz Misel Midbara. In previous times, or in better times, Moab had supported the Jewish people. They had been a good neighbor, and they would send over animals. Moab was sheep territory. They had very good sheep land. So they had there was an agreement where they supported, they would send over sheep. And so he's saying you should send the sheep. They had stopped. The sheep also was a form of a tax. The big countries in the area would have the armies that would defend the smaller countries, and then the smaller countries would support the bigger countries.
A tribute.
They say, well, today the same way the states pay money to the federal government and they have the army, in those days they would pay tribute. So Moab used to pay tribute, and they stopped. So he's saying here, the first mistake you made was you stopped paying the tribute. You stopped sending the... even in the times of Shlomo HaMelech, the people would send tribute. That was a sign that they acknowledged that you were doing good things, that they supported you. And they stopped sending. They stopped sending the... So he says, Shilchukar, you should send, you leaders, you stop sending. That was a problem. Verse 2, Vahayuk of Nodad. And the Moabites, who had been settled for many years, they were about to become wandering people. They were going to be destroyed by Sancheirav. Sancheirav was the one that eventually would be killed outside the city gates in Eretz Yisrael. But before he would do that, he would destroy Moab. Sancheirav, when he took people, conquered a nation, he removed the people from their land and brought them to a different land. That's why today we no longer know who the ancients are. In other words, none of the nations in the Middle East are the authentic people of those lands. Then we don't have the Moabite. Even the Egyptians are not Egyptians. We have a rule, for example, that normally if an Egyptian wants to convert, they have to wait 3 generations, and we don't let them convert. Today, if an Egyptian wants to convert, they're not genetically an Egyptian. In other words, the ancient peoples that populated the lands, they were all transferred around. They were all moved around by Sancheirav. That was the same as he did with the Jewish people, although those peoples, when they moved to other lands, they forgot their identity. The Jewish people is really the only nation that, even though we've moved around, we know who we are. We don't lose our identity to the nation that we're in. We set ourselves up wherever we may be, and that's the. But Moab, he's saying, you're going to be like a fluttering bird, like a bird wanders around. That's the example he gives. Oh no, they came. Meshulah tiyanu benos Moab ma'arvus la'arnon. You're going to be sent out from one place to another. Verse 3. Heviu Eitzah. You're going to want to know what to do. You're going to have all kinds of plans. When Sancheirav was on the way to eventually destroy Moab, he also destroyed much of Eretz Yisrael. And what happened was he destroyed all of the small towns and farms in Eretz Yisrael. And most of the inhabitants ran to Yerushalayim because that was the big walled city where they would be safe. So some of them ran away to Moab because they would run anywhere they thought would be safe from Sancheirav. Now, when they ran to Moab, they thought, no problem, we'll go to our cousins across across those tiny rivers, and I'm sure they'll help us flee from Sancheirav. And had they done so, then they wouldn't have had to worry about Sancheirav. But what did they do? The poor Jews that were running away from Sancheirav, Moab turned them over to Sancheirav. So this is what he mentions over here. What you should have done is, Asi plia shis kalo tzilech besok saharayim. Let the wanderers like hide with you. Nidav haven't noted, don't give away their whereabouts. You should allow the Jews that are running away to be safe. You should allow them to be secure. There's... the Gentiles, there are non-Jews that have this concept of sanctuary. You know, when somebody's running away, you help them. And they got it from here, from the Torah, that, you know, you should help somebody that's on the run. The only problem is they gave sanctuary to the Nazis. You know, or they gave sanctuary to the... there's a concept of helping, you know, innocent people or people that are when they're down. But if somebody is a criminal and they're harming people and you're enabling them to go somewhere else and harm somewhere else, then you don't give sanctuary. That's like a... but over here, the Moabites should have helped us out. You should let those exiles come into your country. Because they're running away from a plunder. Ki ases hametz, and Moab was a very rich country. One thing we remember about Lot was that he went to Sodom because he was interested in the wealth. And when his uncle Avraham told him that it was better to muzzle your cows rather than your sheep and your cows rather than that they should eat other people's fields, that didn't bother him. He was more interested in the being wealthy than he was in muzzling his cows and not letting them eat other people's fields. And Moab was interested in they were a very rich country. And so he's describing the when you milk a cow and then all of a sudden no milk comes out. That's like, you know, you've had things easy, but it's not going to happen anymore. Ki ofis hametz kol shod tamo romis menorot. The things are going to come to an end. Verse 5. Now, why was Israel different? Why should it be that Sancheirav was successful against all of these bordering nations, and he got rid of all of them, and Israel would survive? And this has to give us pause, too. You know, the Middle East is a bad neighborhood, and the Arab Spring, and all these areas are going wild, and they have wars. And what would keep Eretz Yisrael under? Why should Israel be different? And the answer is, as long as it's established in righteousness, and we're doing the right things, then we'll have peace. So Hukan, Eretz Yisrael, did not get conquered by Sancheirav because it was set up b'chesed. It was set up with being kind to one another. Kiseh, that's the throne. That was the concept of David, was a king that worked for the people, not that the people worked for the king. The Yoshev Alav the Emes. And he sat on his throne in a truthful way. Ba'ohol David, shofet, and he insisted that there be justice. The Dorish Mishpat, and he looked to be fair. In other words, Dorish Mishpat was, he didn't allow people to be corrupt. He didn't allow people to take things that weren't there. Umahir Tzedek, and if people needed, he gave tzedakah. So Israel was not going to be affected by Sancheirav, but you Moab, we got the bad news. 6. Shemanu Gaon Moav. Moav is described in this word, Gaon. We have the word like the Vilna Gaon. A Gaon means a very great or high person. In this sense, though, it means Moav was haughty or high. I've heard about how high you think you are. Shemanu Gaon Moav. Gay Moav. They are very gay, very proud, very. They hold themselves up. Like they look down at everybody. Gavaso ugono vavraso lokein bedayov. The Moab just really thought that they were the greatest gift to the world, and they thought that they could. It was all coming to them, and that's the way they pictured themselves. They went with an arrogance, and they went. And there are, sometimes you get that from certain European nations, that they have a certain arrogance about themselves, that they think that everything's coming to them, or that Hashem doesn't like that. The same thing we don't like. In other words, there are attitudes. People have to work on attitudes also. Like if a person has an attitude that people are turned off, or that people feel that they're looking down at them, or that eventually their time will come. L'chein, therefore, Yehlilu Moav. Therefore, let Moab cry for Moab. You better cry for yourself. Kula Yila Ishe Shekir. You should cry for, this is the name of a city. Kurishi Tegu Aknakoim. You should be brokenhearted because your land is going to be destroyed. Your cities are going to be destroyed. Verse 8. Kishadamu, now Moab was a very wealthy country. It was the breadbasket. Kishadamu's Cheshbon, the grain fields of Cheshbon, Umro, they're going to be totally empty, wiped out. And they also had grain and wine. Wine grew from grapevines. Gefen Shivma Bale Goyin Halalu, the grapevines of Shivma. I wonder if that's like which vineyard that is. Today, what's interesting, Israel is trying to create an economy, and so different, they started with the Yafa oranges. Now there's a lot of wine that comes from Israel. And the people came from reading Tanakh that in ancient times there was much wine that grew in Israel, and they've been successful, and Israeli wines are getting better and better.
Well, there's some very good ones on the market now.
Mm-hmm. And I guess wine gets its flavor from the land, and you don't really know till you try it which lands have the produce good wine or cultivate good wine. But it goes back. You know, it's mentioned here that Israel was the Middle East was a place for very good wine. But until Israel tried it, they had there was no wine in the Middle East. There was no all you had was oil coming out of the Middle East, really. But that's today you can find some very good vineyards, and even if you tour Eretz Israel, you can go to different vineyards and see different places where they've planted the grapevines. Oh, do they? Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
I'm sorry to digress, but Deepa, when Yosef moved everyone around, is that the same concept of people displaced and different peoples?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, they were in the same country.
Yeah.
But I remember even growing up that you'd run into people. Well, my grandfather came over on the Mayflower, and they were like very proud and uppity. And I don't hear it as much anymore. Maybe I'm not hanging around those places but there used to be that kind of thing. Like my grandparents were immigrants, and so we weren't true American. You know, they were always afraid. They were called greenhorns. I don't know where that name came from, even, but they were just afraid of not. They felt it was very important to show that you were American, to show that, to try to belong, to be accepted. So Yosef, in his time, he moved some of the peoples around so that when to make Egypt a little bit more accepting of, when people live in the same place forever and someone else comes, they would treat them like strangers. Mm-hmm. And so he moved them, but that was within a country. It was more of a political move, that he knew that people could rebel in their homeland. They knew their way around, and they would fight over their homeland. But if they transferred populations to different places, so then they wouldn't know their way around. They'd be more defeated. They'd be less likely to rebel. So he did something that it hasn't been done. A little bit of it happened in World War II when Hitler came. He transferred different areas, like the Sudetenland, where he kicked all the Jews out, and he kicked all of the Poles out, and he had it settled by Germans. And then when Russia later on got conquered at the end of World War II, they kicked all the Germans out, and there were movements of populations of peoples that were. But Sancheira was the originator of that concept of, if you want to conquer a nation, you have them leave the area where they're at. Otherwise, they're going to fight. They're going to be a thorn in your side. So he would pick them up and settle them somewhere else. But there were these vineyards there. And the Moab, you should think about what you're going to lose. You're going to lose all these granaries. You're going to lose these vineyards. I'm in the middle of 8 of Ches. Bale Goyim Homushruka Ad Yazer. That's the name of a place also. Nagoto Midbar. The people are going to go out into the desert. Shokhu Natru Avriyam. You're going to be sent far away across the desert, across the sea. 9. Al Kain Efka Vivechi. The Jewish people, they can cry for anybody. They were soft. We're talking about this. Even though Moab was being punished, as Yeshayahu was reading the prophecy, he really felt bad for them. And so he was crying for them. Therefore, he said, I'm going to weep and cry over the fate of the, it was a beautiful country, and the people were settled, and all of it would be wiped out. And it was a tragedy. If they had done the right things, it wouldn't have had to happen. But he said, therefore, you better cry. I'm going to cry for Yazir, Geffen, Shivma, and for the wine, Aryok, Dima. I'm going to have big tears. Cheshbon. Cheshbon is mentioned in the Torah as one of the cities that Moab had. Ula'elik, Yalkin Kitzech. Because this was the, they used to have really good figs. Balkitzire, Chayedad, Venafel. The farmers, they develop things over years. They figure out the best places to plant, and they have prize things that grow, and all of this would be destroyed. And today, you go to these areas, and you never know that there was farmland there, that things grew, that... Yud. Vanessa Simcha Begil Mina Carmel. And you won't have any joy and happiness. It's all going to be gathered away. Forget that. And Carmel was the area of the field. B'karamim lo yiran, and the vineyards where people would be so happy when the crops grow, like the farmers are happy. It's like their ship is coming in. You know, they see the crops grow and it looks like a good crop. Lo yiru, they won't get a chance to make their wine. B'karamim lo yidruk, they won't get to make their oil. It's all hadorech. Hey, Dad, Heshibosi. The people that used to bring in the harvest, they have nothing to do. 11. Okay, May Elamoav. He says, now the person really cries. I guess they get a stomach ache. He says, therefore my stomach goes for Moav. That's an expression. Kikino Yamu. And when a person cries, it sounds like a harp, like a soft weeping. So he says that the crying or the moaning will be like a harp. I bet somebody could play that, you know, they'll make the harp sound like tears. And when you go to certain ballets and things, they make, you know, there's certain scenes where they play in a certain way that's supposed to represent sadness and certain notes that represent joy. And if you're into that, you can pick up on it, you know, when they play a certain thing, you're supposed to be happy or sad or today I think we're more direct. I don't think we're as subtle. It used to be on the old TV shows they would have that where the music in the background would tell you how you're supposed to feel or get excited or
have you ever heard a violin cry?
No.
Oh, well, you listen to some, especially Jewish violins. they somehow bring a tone out of a violin.
Like a sad tone? I see.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a cry.
I always think of taps because somehow that was what they used to play, you know, and that's a trumpet, I guess. But he's saying that this would sound like a harp. Why not? And my innards would feel bad about these cities. It would be destroyed. Verse 12. And Moav, their original plan was if anybody comes against us, first of all, they had a lot of wealth. And usually with wealth, you could buy your way out of war because you could pay the people off. So Moab never worried about that. And here, their wealth didn't help them. And they also were a warrior nation, so they did a lot of fighting. And fighting wasn't getting them anywhere. They were being slowly destroyed by Sancheiriv. So when they got tired of fighting, Abahaya Kinira Kinila Moab al Habama Uva al Mikachi. They would come into their sanctuary. They worshipped idols. As Pala Velo Yuchal, they weren't able to even pray. The whole system of idolatry was eventually was so wicked that eventually Hashem would uproot it. But he's mentioning that here that they when a person doesn't even have strength to pray, it means like they have no hope. They won't even be able to go to their places to pray. Sometimes a person they always have prayer, but if you take away even a prayer for them, they have no hope. Then that's really bad. So this was the prophecy he said against Moab. This was the word. This is what, and this was well known, and this was said. Mayoz, this was they had their warning. Ba'ata diber Hashem leimor. Now, I don't know when the now was, but apparently he was telling them he was going through the previous known prophecy, and now he's giving them a deadline. He said, Lamer Kishol Shanim, you got 3 years. Kishni Sachir. And we had, again, when we had to be punished, we had first there was the siege of the city, and then there was the breaking of the walls, and the 3 weeks, and the 9 days. Hashem gives a warning before he... it says that when Hashem brought the flood over the world, first it started raining. Mm-hmm. And if the people had done teshuva, it would have been a rain of blessing. It's like there's always hope. Things could always change. As long as there's time, sometimes a person thinks it won't happen. But he said now there's 3 years, and 3 years' time to Shnei Sachir. Like the years of, they used to hire people for a 3-year term. The Nikla Kavod, and that's it. Moav, you and your honor, Bekol Hamon Harav. Behol Hamon Harav, Ushar Ma'at Mizir Lo Kabir. And Moav, all your honor, all your glory, all your wealth is going to be gone. And you might assume that there'll be a lot left. No, very little will survive this thing with Moav. Okay, good. So that's the story, I shouldn't say good, I mean we're supposed to be sad, I guess. But Moav had their chance. They could have helped out their cousins, especially when we were refugees, and they did the opposite. And they had an arrogance about them. They thought their wealth would always protect them. And Yeshayahu said, no, it's not going to protect them. It's not going to help. I guess we could start the next one. Now we get to the next neighbor. This one is Damascus. Masai Damasek, the prophecy concerning Damascus, that's Syria. He named Damasek Musar Meir. Damascus, which was a big, well-known ancient city for... the Middle East is such an interesting place because it's been inhabited for so many hundreds, thousands of years that these are cities that go back to ancient times. And so he's saying that Damascus would be sacked. Abraham's main man was Eliezer Damasek. He was from Damascus. That was from the. But he said Damascus is going to be Musar Meir. It's not going to be a city. You try to live in Damascus today, it's no longer a city. The buses don't go. There's a lot of Vahaisa Me'ir Mafala. And it's going to be a complete Mapala. Mapala is to fall. Everything is going to fall down. Azubos Are Ore, Ladarim, and the cities will be abandoned to the flocks, Tiena, Rav Sevein Machrit. And the animals will be able to go over things and they won't be disturbed because they won't be inhabited. Now, what had happened was that Syria had gone together with the 10 tribes in attacking Yehuda. And both Syria and Yehuda would be carted off, would be destroyed by Sennacherib. So, Benishbas Mifsar Me'ephraim, and so he mentions this, that, you know, when a Jew goes together with a non-Jew against a Jew, that's a terrible thing, and that's what had happened. Mifsar Me'ephraim, Alacha Me'Damashek. So, Ephraim and Damascus, both them together, Shar Rambakov B'nai Yisrael, and they will, they will both lose their kingdom because they came against the B'nai Yisrael. This is what Hashem says. Now, the 10 tribes was Jacob, was the Jewish people, but they also would go and be destroyed, and their honor would be destroyed. Umishman basaro yirza, and their flesh would rot. It would be a bad thing. Okay, I guess we'll stop here in verse 5. First I was thinking we should get rid of all the bad prophecies and get to the good stuff, but, you know, the idea is when bad people are punished, so that's a good thing. You know, eventually retribution comes, and then there could be new beginnings.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.